Welcome to Living Astrology with host Janet Hickox, intuitive astrologer and human design consultant, and her co-host Jason Levanis, intuitive tarot card reader and teacher, as well as feng shui consultant. At Living Astrology Radio, we are committed to empowering people to reach for the stars. Now enjoy the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Living Astrology. I'm your host, Janet Hickox. And with me today, my lovely co-host, Jason Levanis. Hello, Jason.
Hello, my blue-eyed goddess. How art thou today?
I am significantly better than I was yesterday. How about you?
What did you do? Double up on your Klonopin? Because that's the only way I can figure out that you got any better. Because everyone I'm talking to is walking around in an absolute stupor.
Yeah, you know, if I let it get to me, then I have that same issue again. But I'll tell you what happened to me last night. In the middle of the night, I woke up. I don't even think it was really the middle of the night. It was probably, I don't know, who knows. And I thought to myself, you know, the dark wins if I dampen down my light. Right. If I stop doing what I like to do, if I stop being optimistic, and if I stop being, you know, the kind of the guidepost for people along the way, then the dark wins. Mm-hmm. And I'm just not willing to go there. So I decided that I was going to get over this whole issue and start looking deeper. And so I woke up this morning with a fresh sort of view to the world and started digging into the whole Jupiter-Saturn cycle, which to me was so fascinating, and
how it shows
us exactly what's going on.
I'll tell you, very often you play good cop and I play bad cop, so you'll have to excuse me if I'm still a little on the less than positive modality. So I'll let you be full of shits and giggles, and I'm going to continue to bitch and moan. So how's
that's
that
all right
for you?
That's good. You can bitch and moan. That's good. And you know, what's even better is that you can bitch and moan today and I'll bitch and moan tomorrow. I mean, we can take turns. That's kind of the cool thing about having a partner in crime is that we don't have to be the same way at the same time.
Well, speaking about partner in crime, I'm getting another partner in crime next week. Did you know that?
Yes, I didn't know that.
Hickox.
Please enlighten me.
Her name is
Janet
Hickox.
I know her.
She's awesome. She's got this incredible head of hair. For all of you that don't know, we have had such lovely response here at Living Astrology since I have been obscening up the airwaves with Janet, that this coming Wednesday, same time slot for all of you people, Pacific time, 4 o'clock, and 7 o'clock for all of the people here on this side of the United States. I'm going to be doing my first my virgin tour, as it were. I'm going to be doing my first radio show, and I use the word virgin tour because it's titillating. Funny enough, my radio show will be called Titillating Tarot with Jason Levanis, by where I am going to be demystifying the understanding of the tarot, to take it out of some gypsy fortune-telling Mickey muck and make people understand its validity, which will be more like an extension of the show that I did with you when you had me on as a guest, at which point every week, one card from the deck, and I will be starting with the very first card of the major arcana. I will discuss it, and then I will be taking callers to do mini readings. And for all of you that don't know, I will have Janet in the background being my producer, making sure that I don't fuck up too much. Because God knows it's going to be fun. And I'm also going to have guests come on of different topics. They might not all be metaphysical, but I think things that will be relevant, at least, and or interesting, that will be titillating. And
I love it. That's such a great word.
Well, you know, I think a lot of times these metaphysicians, parapsychologists, whatever words you want to use, they get into the very esoteric sort of godly spiritual aspect. And for me, especially as a Capricorn and some of the other fun things that are going on in my chart, I'm pretty rooted in my first chakra, sex. And without it, I think a lot of people would find themselves floundering. And so my cards are sexual. I'm sexual. I enjoy being naughty. And I enjoy making sure that people understand that if you don't have the bottom of your chakra taken care of, you're sure as hell not going to be able to take care of the top of your chakras. So that
Who thought tarot and astrology would be boring, right?
Exactly. That being said, Janet, I loved our show last week, the show that we had with respect to relationships, which goes back into our cycle that we're in right now. And I know that some people contacted me and I had to redirect them. So people who cannot hear or take down the information fast enough, would you please tell them how they can get an astrological or human design reading from you?
Absolutely. My website is www.living-astrology.com. And on that page, the home page, you can actually request a human design chart or a Jupiter in Libra chart. Or if you just want to see what your astrology chart looks like because you've never seen one before, you can get a copy of your chart there. And of course, if you
free?
Are interested, they are all three free. They are all three free.
Oh,
so
free's,
it's
free's
a really nice
me.
Deal.
Mm-hmm.
Three for you, three for me,
free's
and
for me.
Free for everybody. A free for all.
And
so
I hope that everybody has patience because I'm in the process of creating my first webpage. I'm in contact with GoDaddy and trying to get that off. So hopefully within the next couple of days, I will have my titillating tarot with Jason Levanis webpage up. And if they want to contact me, they can contact me at the moment at Zen Staging, which is my feng shui consultant site for tarot card readings at zenstaging@gmail.com. All right, now that I've done our plugs, let's jump in and tell me why I shouldn't be out of my fucking mind about this election.
Well, you could be out of your mind because I think a lot of us are out of our minds. We're out of our comfort zones. We don't understand what's gone on. We don't have a clue why the media was telling us one thing and why something else completely different happened. And yet, as I looked into some of the information about cycles of time, it was perfectly in accordance and should have gone just the way it did. And I don't think that it could have gone any other way. And so we're going to talk about some really interesting things today. First of all, you know, astrology is one of those things, one of those subjects that often works best in hindsight. For example, in hindsight, we can go back and we can see some of these cycles of planetary actions that were in ongoing. But we can see them in the way that they were affecting us. And this is, you know, by way of learning about ourselves and how astrology works in the world. So we're going to talk a lot today about cycles because planetary cycles are very important to the grand scheme of things. In that, you know, there are cycles, for example, of the moon. We, you know, let's pick the moon right now because the moon is something that we can see very clearly the cycle of, right? Given 28 days in a month, we can see it move from the new phase to its first quarter phase to its full phase to the last quarter and then back to new. So we're very, you know, aware of how the cycles of the moon work. But did you know that other planets have these same kinds of cycles? And so we're going to talk about the specific cycle that I think had a lot to do with this election, and that is the Jupiter-Saturn cycle. But before I get to that, I want to talk a little bit about the cycles in themselves and what does it mean to be in a cycle? Because there seems to be this ability for us in a cycle to see different energies that are at play. So, for example, when we talk about a new moon, or the beginning of a cycle, we're talking about a conjunction, meaning two planets at the same degree of the same sign. So when we have a new moon, we see both the sun and the moon at the same degree. And when we were talking about, and we will be talking about as we move on here, Jupiter and Saturn, they will have also been in a conjunction. And from the conjunction, we move to the first quarter. So we'll, before we go there, though, let's think of the action of planets and their movement through the sky or in relationship to one another as a wave motion. So we have a low part of the wave or the trough, and then we have the upper part of the wave or the height or the crest, and all, of course, the points in between. So we have then at the new moon or at the new of the Jupiter-Saturn cycle, the idea that we have something new happening. We have maybe some spontaneous and instinctual action that we can take, a new direction we can head out into, something new that we want to establish, maybe a new rhythm, a new value perhaps, lots of different things that can start out as new as we get into a conjunction of two planets.
All right, so let me get this straight so I can get my brains together here. So I understand this idea behind planetary cycles.
Right.
But with respect to the Jupiter-Saturn cycle, what you're saying to me is this election went the way it went because we have to have something new and different?
No, exactly the opposite. We are in a closing of that particular cycle. And so I'm going to take people through now what each of the points of the cycle represent in the grander terms, like in the more general terms. And then we're going to dive into the Jupiter-Saturn cycle itself and look at what was happening during each of these particular points along the cycle. For example, the conjunction where they first made that connection with one another. So I was talking about the conjunction, and that's something new, something spontaneous or instinctual that we take as an action that takes us in a new direction. The 90-degree angle, we could call it the first quarter. So the first quarter moon, for example, first we have the new moon, 7 days later we have the first quarter moon. And here we have a crisis point, right? We come to our first crisis in grounding in the new concept or the new action that we stepped out to at the conjunction. And we can call this point the crisis in action, right? Because it's a letting go of the past, and we are opening ourselves up to new ways of being. And that often brings us to a crisis point of, oh, I have to let go of something if I want to move forward, and us wanting to hold on, human nature, right? We like to hold on. At the full moon, if we're looking at the moon, or at the opposition where two planets would be in opposition to each other. The full moon ultimately is the sun and the earth, at opposite ends of the earth. In the Jupiter-Saturn cycle, it would be Jupiter in one sign and Saturn in the other at the opposite end. And that would be where we expect fulfillment of some sort, or a completion, a revelation, maybe an illumination where suddenly the light comes on and it dawns on us, right? It may even present us with a renewed purpose. And in that, there's a power that begins to show up, and the power is of creative consciousness, right? We've gotten this idea, this spontaneous or this instinctual action that we have to take, and now we have the creative consciousness to try to bring that into play. And then we come to the last quarter, which would be the last 90-degree angle before they conjunct again. And this is also a crisis point. The crisis here is in consciousness. How do we share meaning and value with our fellow human beings, especially given, you know, the circumstances of change, the things that are changing in our world? So essentially that last quarter phase is the time where we're going to see a breakdown, a disintegration. And it provides us with a time to formulate or assimilate a new vision. Now, let's take that general information and let's put it toward the Jupiter-Saturn cycle and what we're experiencing here in the now. First of all, Jupiter and Saturn, we could say, have two cycles. There's a great cycle of Jupiter and Saturn. The great cycle is an 800-year cycle. And that 800-year cycle began in the year 1702, long time ago, right? 1702 was the year they had their conjunction at the Aries point, we would say, or at the closest to the astrological new year, which always begins in Aries. And it takes 800 years then from that first point that they conjunct in Aries to go completely around all the way back through Pisces and then back to Aries. So if we're going to look at our crisis points and our concept of new crisis and full and crisis, then we see that every 200 years in the great cycle, we're going to come to some of these very stressful points. And it's really kind of interesting if we look at that, because the great cycle in this particular case is we're in the midst of the second part of that, the second portion. The 200-year piece that we find ourselves in right now is what we would call the first quarter. So we're in the crisis in action point, a point where we have to learn to let go of the past and where we have to open ourselves up to new ways of being. So that's the bigger picture in the background of that whole Jupiter-Saturn cycle. But now if we look at the grand conjunction Jupiter and Saturn, which happens once every 20 years, when they conjunct like that, it marks a new cultural, political, and economic era. And since that happens every 20 years, it's very useful for us to go back and look at when was the last time Jupiter and Saturn conjuncted in this cycle, and that was on May 28th of 2000. So if we look at the election, just look at just the election here in the USA. Back in 2000, the election was between Al Gore and George Bush, and what happened?
It was
Al Gore won the popular
vote,
right?
Yep.
Yeah, Al Gore won the popular vote, but the Electoral College went to whom? Bush, and
yep.
Bush became president. And here we have this repeat of this cycle that began in 2000, and
wow.
Here we have a sort of repeat, if you will, of a theme. And the theme is of perhaps one of the Electoral College perhaps being a problem, and it not having been updated over the last 232 years or so of our American Constitution. And there
yes.
may be other, you know, things in underneath the surface there that we would need to look at. But the opportunity for us is in the grander cycle for us to look at what's working from the past, what isn't, and how do we join that with something new and carry on. And guess what? Some of these themes that I'm talking about right now are giving me goosebumps because they're the same themes that you and I were talking about over the last couple of weeks in human design, right? The idea of Gate 44, taking the best from the past, marrying
right.
it to something new, something transformational, and creating a new opportunity for growth and expansion. It's perfectly
mm-hmm.
in alignment. I love the coherence of that. So what are some of the things that we saw happen then? If we go back to May 28th of 2000, and let's take a look at the year 2000 to 2001, that particular conjunction happened at 22 degrees, 43 minutes of Taurus. I want you all to write that down because that's going to play a big role in as we get later
one,
on in this talk today. 22
one more
degrees
time,
of Taurus.
That? Okay.
22 degrees, 43 minutes of Taurus. I only say
Taurus
the 43
being...
minutes so you get an idea. Taurus being the sign of the bull, right? The second
and
sign of the zodiac.
The female, the mother sign of the zodiac, correct?
No, Taurus is not the mother energy. It's more the energy of prosperity, of lack of money, of it's an earth sign. It is ruled by Venus. And so
that just goes
it
to show you how
right
much I know. I was always under the impression that Taurus was the female and that Leo was the male sort of influence. That was the father and mother of the zodiac. So that goes to show you how wrong my information is.
I guess in some ways you could lay those tags on it. Taurus is certainly a feminine sign, mm-hmm. ruled by a feminine planet. But I wouldn't necessarily give it the mother energy. So
okay.
Let's just stick with the topic. Don't get me off on a tangent because I'll go there.
Okay.
So here we are then at 22 degrees, 43 minutes of Taurus on May 28th, 2000, and Jupiter and Saturn come together in a conjunction and start a new cycle here. And remember, the beginning of the cycle is something new, right? Something spontaneous and instinctual that shows up in the dynamic of humanity or in our consciousness. And what happens very close to this is the dot-com technology bubble bursts with the crash of the NASDAQ stock market. And we start this idea then of, or begins to dawn on us that there's something wrong in our economy. And remember, Jupiter-Saturn cycles mark the beginning of a new cultural, political, or economic era. And this becomes an era of the crashes, right? The crashes followed by unsustainable growth in some respects. Mm-hmm. For example, mm-hmm. the dot-com bubble burst followed by the unsustainable real estate speculation market. And so it becomes really a fascinating subject if we're looking just at the economy. And, of course, Taurus is a sign ruled by Venus that rules money. So the economy is a very big part of this particular Jupiter-Saturn cycle.
Hang on. Went very fast there for me. You said that Taurus is responsible for economy?
Taurus is ruled by Venus, which rules money. And so it's very natural for us to look at the economy in this particular cycle as one of the hallmarks of what's changing.
Okay, awesome.
So if we have a 20-year cycle and we're going to separate it into four quarters, which is how we look at this particular cycle, then what we also have then is a five-year cycle involved in this, right? So at the new beginning of this, and 5 years later, we come to the first square or the first quarter. And that would have been like from 2005 to 2006. So here is the point that we have the first hints of what was going to be called or become the Great Recession, right? In 2005, we have the housing bubble burst, and then the subsequent subprime mortgage crisis, which leads to a whole host of companies closing down, banks going, you know, tits up, even big, you know, financial companies having issues and going out of business over the next crises after crises, right?
I remember Lehman Brothers, you know.
Yeah, Lehman Brothers and
huge institution, yes.
Mm-hmm. Goldman Sachs and
yes.
Well, anyway, so we have the first hints of the Great Recession. What's coming up for us in that time, too, is that Obama announces his candidacy for president at the end of April of 2007. We're seeing a stage being set. And then we actually fall into the Great Recession. I had to look this up because I couldn't remember the date, but it's logged as from December 2007 to June of 2009. So we have this 19-month-long idea of this crisis point. Remember, the first quarter is crisis in action, a letting go of the past to open up to new ways of being. So what we see here, very much highlighted for us, is the unsustainability of how we've been running our economy. Well, then we come to the next 5 years, which takes us to 2010 and 2011, where we have the opposition point, Jupiter and Saturn in opposition. And what we have now is the beginning, the little peaky a glimpse, if you will, at the economic recovery to come. Interestingly enough, this is so funny that in 2010, I think it's April 2nd of 2010, the movie Clash of the Titans comes out, right? Clash of the Titans. What are Jupiter and Saturn but the Titan planets of our inner solar system? And, you know, giant planets. And you have this clash. They're in opposition to one another. And what do we start to see in the world? But we start to see this polarization, huge polarization in Congress as the Tea Party emerges victorious during the congressional elections that year. And then we see this fight going on where nothing, like gridlock, you know, congressional gridlock, nothing is getting done. And what else is born? I shouldn't say it was born because it was actually born before this. But what we really see is the power of social media. It really begins to become a process through which we can all become one. We can air our grievances. We can call people out. We can get information faster and faster. More people have joined up into the social medias, and it becomes a huge part of our reality here. So that's all happening at the opposition point of the Jupiter-Saturn cycle. And then we head into the last quarter, 2015-2016, where are we? We are now in this last quarter. This is the time of the establishment versus the outsider. And what happened in this election? We had a rebellion, a revolt, if you will, against the establishment. And this is a time where in our model of what the planets do in their dance with one another, that we have this crisis in consciousness that occurs. How do we now share the meaning and the value of what has happened with our fellow human beings? And this is a time that we break down and disintegrate. The old system is breaking down and disintegrating. But this leaves us the time then to formulate and assimilate a new vision. Who do we want to be now? Where do we want to go now? And so in the grand scheme of things, this last 4 to 5 years of this Jupiter-Saturn cycle are perfectly in alignment with what Trump represents, albeit a trumped-up version of himself, one that's very obviously almost buffoon-like in its the way that it's played out on the world stage or in this, you know, United in the political stage. But he has his job to do, and it is to make us really wake up to a time where we can formulate and assimilate a new vision. Now, the next cycle get started on December 21st of 2020. And of course, what's happening at that point is we're ready to inaugurate a new president who will obviously not be Trump. And that makes what he does in this 4 years almost negligible, except for us to see how we must change, how we must transform, how we must look at the way things have gone on.
There you go, painting a pretty picture again.
Well, it's not going to be pretty, certainly. In the last quarter of any of the cycles, it's never the pretty cycle because it is the crisis point of consciousness. So, you know, we are going to be faced with the consciousness of what are we trying to create? Do we really go backwards in time to the 50 years prior where, you know, things like racism and sexism and all of that are dominant in our world? Or are we going to turn the corner and we are going to go in that opposite direction? Are we going to, as we the people, are we going to demand something better, not only of ourselves, but of the people that represent us? And so even though I do not like the idea of this presidency, it is fitting for the energies of where the world is going, for what we have to do next, right? There is something extraordinarily poetic about this. It may not be the kind of poetry we like where it's all love and peace and harmony. It's definitely not that. But there is an Edgar Allan Poe sort of feel to the poetry of what's happening
I was going to say more like Sylvia Plath, but okay.
That works too, I suppose. So,
putting your head in the oven.
To take heart. Yeah, really. I want people to take heart here. You know, whether you were for him or against him doesn't really matter. He's here. He is in our reality for these next 4 years. And it's up to us now to start the demand of what it is we want. Where do we want to go? You know, are we going to stand for this kind of polarization that has characterized our country? Are we going to, and the world, it's not just in our country, it's happening everywhere. It's happening between the USA and other countries. It's happening between religions, you know, it's happening between cultures. So it's not just the United States, it's happening around the world because Jupiter and Saturn don't affect just the USA, it affects everybody. And we're in this together. And so we have to pull ourselves together and figure out where do we go from here because the way things have been is totally not sustainable anymore. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions?
All right.
Any questions? So anybody out there?
So that is our Jupiter-Saturn cycle.
That is our Jupiter-Saturn cycle. That's the grand conjunction or the grand part of the cycle. I think you were talking to other people when I was talking about the greater cycle, the 800-year cycle, the great cycle, if you will. And some notes that I took down, in 1702 was when the great cycle began. And at that point in time, we were really facing the Industrial Revolution. So the 200 years hence, you know, we come to 1902, and that's the 200-year period we find ourselves in right now. And what we've had is this scientific revolution, right? So that's really an interesting piece. In 2102, we enter into the next piece of that great cycle. So what are we going to be looking at then? That's an interesting question for us to look at.
So, Janet, before I jump into the supermoon question, and perhaps even with this, you know, you and I were talking previously about this scenario that's going on energetically with Jupiter and Uranus, or as you like to call it, Uranus. Before we do that, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the personal elements of the Saturn-Jupiter. I was in the background, as many people don't know, screening calls. So I don't know, did you hit on any of that yet?
No, I did not hit on the personal pieces of this. So that's a great question.
So why don't we go there first?
Right. We can go here because, you know, these two planets are creating this energy that we've been living under as a collective, let's say. But they're also hitting you personally. And I think I see this best when I deal with human design astrology, because what I see there is that Saturn represents the lessons we're here to learn. And then when we learn those lessons that Saturn brings us, then we are in line to gain our Jupiter reward. So even though these two planets have a role in these worldly affairs, you and I are also a part of a cycle in our own charts as to what we're growing towards. Right. It's sort of makes me think of the life purpose, perhaps. I mean, if I'm incarnating on this planet and I have Jupiter in a cycle of growth in relationships, let's say somebody being born right now is born with Jupiter in Libra, the growth potential for them is in relationships. But Saturn right now is in Capricorn, so they're coming into the planet with lessons, possibly, about their belief system, about the philosophies that they've adopted or that they see in action around them. And so what we get then is this sense of how are we going to grow, and we get rewarded, by the way, when I think of karma, I don't think of the nasty end of karma necessarily, or the punishment end. I like to think of karma as the gifts and talents and the skills and experiences I bring with me. And now how do I use those to move forward in my life, but to also make a contribution to the planet? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Absolutely.
And so you all could be asking yourselves the same question, right? What is my Saturn lessons that I'm learning, and how, you know, the gifts and talents that I brought here with me, and how am I going to pour those outward into the world to make a contribution? And I think for all of us, if we focus in on that piece, if we focus in on what is our role, then it leaves us a pathway to move forward, even in these bad times or these awkward times. I would say awkward is probably a good word, because there's no clear way forward here in these next 4 years. So
So not to steal your thunder, but for all of the fledgling astrologists out there who are listening to you, because I know that they do, if you were to look at someone's natal chart, what is it that they would be looking for so that they could get their understanding of the personal elements of the Saturn-Jupiter energy?
They're first going to look at the sign that Jupiter and Saturn are in. And, of course, I usually will also pull the human design chart, because I want to see what gates that's sitting at, because it's going to give me the traits.
I want to be selfish. Do you have my chart in front of you?
I don't. I could get it.
Oh, you stinker. I was going to say, I would be curious to see, just if it's the 5 second due, what would be the thing that I'm learning this time around with respect to the Jupiter-Saturn cycle?
Again, that would really depend on what signs they are in. But let's see, what year were you born? 68?
I'm 1968. So, as you know, I'm Capricorn. That never sounds good.
That helps.
So, lessons for me don't come easy. I suppose many people feel that way, you know, oh, woe is me. But I try not to sound like too much of a victim. Because I find this always to be very interesting. I do take my chart out and I look at it from time to time, but I'm not, I don't know, a trained astrologist like yourself. So, like I said, people can...
So hold on here.
Go ahead.
I just pulled your chart up. So I've got your chart in front of me, and I can see that your Saturn is in Aries. So your lessons are around independence, about speaking, about taking action, but thinking first. Aries energies often act first, think later, because it's Mars driven. So Saturn here would say that when you act first, think later, you get punished. But if you plan first and then take action, then you get rewarded, or things move smoother for you. So independence, self-sufficiency, self-acceptance, a lot of those are the things, the lessons that you're here to learn. On top of that, your Saturn is in the first house. And the house is always going to tell me, where is this going to play out? And it's going to play out in your personal life, in your personality. Now, Jupiter for you is in Virgo, in the sixth house. And so the Jupiter reward here is about wholeness. It's about bringing all your parts together and living in health and living holistically. So that's the quick and down and dirty for your particular path.
I like that because, you know, I feel like things have been coming together, and that's wonderful. So now tell me, if you will, tell me a little bit about, because, you know, I believe you mentioned two shows ago that we are in the middle of three supermoons. And I don't think we need to go into what a supermoon is more than on how is this playing into the cycle of Jupiter and Saturn this time.
Well, it's really very interesting because this is what I'm calling this one, the super duper full moon, because it's the
super
closest.
Duper.
It's super duper because it's the closest that the moon ever comes. It's on November 14th. And November 14th, let's see here, 2016 at 5:53 a.m. Pacific time. So that makes it 8:53 a.m. in the East Coast. But I call this the super-duper full moon because not only is it a super moon, but it is also at perigee, which means that it is the closest that the moon can ever come to the Earth. And the last time that happened was in January of 1948. So what's that, almost 60 years ago or 60-some years ago. So it's important.
So if anybody wants to get a good look at the moon, this is the time.
This is the time, definitely. If you can see that moon, although for you guys on the East Coast, the moon will be full at the point in time that the sun has already risen. So it's going to be harder for you to see it. Look at it the night of the 13th. You'll still get the same auspiciousness of looking at this moon and being awestruck by its size. But here's the thunder of this new moon, of this full moon. I don't know why I keep calling it the new moon. It is sitting at 22 degrees, 37 minutes of Taurus and Scorpio. Taurus, Scorpio, did I just tell you was the degree I wanted you guys to pay attention to?
Yeah.
It was, that is the exact place that the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction occurred back in 2000. So there's a sense here, again, with this full moon, because the full moon or any planet that's at 180-degree angle from its, you know, other its partner, in this case the moon and the sun, it's about fulfillment. It's about illumination. Somebody's turning the light on, no pun intended with a full moon and its light, but the light comes on. It's revelation, right? There is renewed purpose. And it begins the shift for us from the power of instinct, being instinctual in how we behave, which instinct often is based out of fear. And it tends to take us now into the direction of a creative consciousness where we can consciously grow, right? Where we can tell ourselves, look, we've played victim in this role long enough. Now it's time for us to become much more self aware and much more conscious of our choices and who we want to be and where we want to go. So this full moon is like a huge, giant punctuation exclamation point to this whole Jupiter-Saturn cycle. And I can't make this shit up. I didn't make this up.
You know, and I have maybe a question that might be a little bit of a curveball for you, but I'm sure you get clients that, you know, here you go through all this explanation and say, but okay, so how do I use that information practically in my everyday life? How do I use that to my advantage? I understand that we are no longer needing to sit in the position of being a victim and that this particular moon is going to energize this particular Jupiter-Saturn conjunct position, and so that adds more sort of boost to the whole energy of it. But how do I use that, mm-hmm. Janet? How do I make it practical?
Well, the practical application here is what is in your awareness, right? What has been unconscious in you versus what is conscious. I think, you know, one of the things that blew me away is that I had to take responsibility for personally accepting what was going on in my outer world. Because no matter what, I've played into it. There's not one person on the planet that hasn't played into what's going on in their outer world. And we've been playing out in that outer world quite often in the unconscious realm. So taking actions, think thoughts about fears and limitations and all these kinds of things, stopping ourselves from really shining our light in the brightest way possible. And it's time for us to wake up. It's time for us to really walk our talk. So, for example, and I've had to pull myself up short on this, so please nobody take offense to this, but mm-hmm. if I'm constantly tuned in to war, you know, there's always this war on terror. There's a war on drugs.
Yeah,
there's
right,
a war on
right,
women
right,
or
right,
a war
right,
on,
right,
you
right.
know. If I'm tuned into the war aspect of that, am I creating peace? And
no.
Can peace exist in that kind of consciousness? And so we really have to start thinking about ourselves, like, what am I, when I speak, what am I saying? You know, am I speaking words that are in support of peace and love and joy and harmony? Or am I still part of the problem? Because I probably
you know,
am still part of the problem, or the world would look a whole lot different to me.
There was a fantastic moment in my metaphysical parapsychological development where I was studying a great modern Indian philosopher by the name of Krishnamurti. Mm-hmm. And he wrote mm-hmm. this academic book called The Awakening of Intelligence. And, you know, it's hard for me to recommend it to anybody because it is, I mean, it's a real academic read in many respects. However, he was speaking in front of an audience, and it was very sort of question-answer typography. And at one point, one of the students in the audience said, "But Master, tell me, when bad things happen to good people like yourself, how do you deal with it?" And he used a really very brilliant double entendre, which I think silenced a lot of people at the time because it was so awesome. He said, "I simply never pay it any mind. Pay it any mind." In other words, he doesn't let it rent space in his head. He doesn't even acknowledge it for the most part, because being in this vacuum universe, when you create these thoughts, when you speak the speak, you're putting this energy out there, as you just said, and the universe is going to respond in kind. It's going to answer you back with war, with difficulty. And I'm not saying that, you know, you should be going around doing cartwheels and having rainbows shoot out of your ass when you find out that, you know, you have to move because your land, you know, lord says, "I'm selling the place." What you do have to do is say, okay, when I'm done, you know, licking my wounds, I'm not going to give this any more power than it needs, because I'm going to end up screwing myself in the end. And I'll become defined by my speak. So, interestingly enough, that's the moon, super moon coming up. Was there anything else on that you wanted to touch on? Because we have about 15 minutes left, and I know the time is going crazy fast for us this week, but I wanted to hit
right.
on the Jupiter and Uranus scenario.
Right. First of all, let me answer a question that showed up in the chat box, and I
okay.
love it that I changed browsers, so today suddenly the chat box works. Hallelujah. But a good question was asked. May 28th, 2000, which is the date that I said that Jupiter-Saturn made their first conjunction in this new cycle, the question was, but isn't that Gemini? And yes, of course, it is Gemini, but it was the sun that was in Gemini at that point. Jupiter and Saturn were in Taurus. They lagged behind. So just to give that clarity, yes, we're talking about the sun was in Jupiter. Sun was in Jupiter. The sun was in Gemini, but Jupiter, Saturn were conjunct in Taurus. So I hope that clears that one up. Now let's go on to Jupiter and Uranus.
Perfectly.
Because, yes. Jupiter and Uranus. Now, I hear Jupiter and Uranus opposition. Jupiter's in Libra. Uranus is in Aries. They are opposite signs from one another. And that is actually the what we call the love and war opposition in the chart. And so we have this idea that this Jupiter-Uranus opposition that's coming up is about revolution. And
wow.
I don't know if that fills me with excitement or a little twinge of, you know, fear. I'm not sure. But here are the dates when this will be occurring, because I want you to watch the world stage on these particular days. Remember, Uranus is the great awakener. And Jupiter's about growth and expansion. Ideally, the revolution is taking us in a new direction, right? Opening up possibilities. So the first of these three, it'll make three oppositions. The first is on December 27th of this year. So just post-Christmas, just before the new year, and just before the inauguration. So it, they will make that opposition at 20 degrees of Libra and Aries. The second opposition point happens March 7th. Of 2017 at 22 degrees Libra. Now this one fills me with a little bit of, a little scintilla of fear, because it happens in the window of the solar eclipse, and it also happens at the Eris point. And for some of you listening who are aware of Eris and the Black Moon Lilith, that point is very sensitive and brings us smack dab face to face with our shadow self. And I think that's a good thing. But sometimes it's a little scary to anticipate that that's coming. The third and final of the Jupiter-Uranus oppositions occurs September 27th of 2017. And for those of you who understand, you know, there's a big total eclipse of the sun occurring in late August of that year, of this coming year. I think it's August 21st. And so we're still in the shadow again of yet another eclipse. And remember, people, game changers. Eclipses are game changers. So we have revolution in the window of game changing. And so it'll be interesting to see how 2017, which I thought was going to hopefully be a more peaceful year, turns out. So there we have it. We have
a
Jupiter-Uranus opposition.
Yeah.
Say that again.
I wonder if the Jupiter-Uranus opposition is an energy that could possibly bring around, and I dare say it might be a little early for this word, but impeachment. I really have no idea how this is going to flesh out in the coming months. For instance, today I was online, and, you know, it's funny. Maybe I'm just an old fart Capricorn. But I had these classical ideas in my head, and when I think of the First Lady, I always think of people like Martha Washington, Eleanor Roosevelt, you know, these staunch sort of wonderful matriarchal stereotypes, you know, people like Jackie O, some heavy hitters, even this Obama lady. And today I saw the most unbelievable, salacious nude pictures of what is going to be our First Lady. And it just, it went into my lexicon, all sorts of wrong. I just thought to myself, I bet you that's a first, that there are nudie pictures. I mean, could you imagine nudie pictures of Eleanor Roosevelt? My God, that would be enough.
I had no idea. That's interesting.
Yeah, I couldn't believe
it. So essentially, Jason, what we're seeing here is we're breaking molds. Right.
I don't necessarily want
Trump impeached. I'm not about that. But what I am going to do now, what I have resolved in this, is to be aware of what's going on, to make sure that I take action in alignment with my goals and my values. I can't control the Trumps of the world. I cannot control Congress. I can vote.
Right.
I can vote.
Right.
I can make my voice heard.
Right.
I can contribute in my way to what happens in the world. He's doing his job. And I said this before, and someone looked at me like, oh, gag, not one of those quest things. But that's the point. He's doing his job. You know, for whatever reason we collectively agreed this man was going to play this role, he's doing it.
Yes.
And
yes, and you know
he's
what?
There
You're
now.
Absolutely right, because Yeah, I look at it and I think to myself, we look at Obama, who was stalemated at every turn with the exception of health care, and how interesting it is, regardless of racism, sexism, ageism, whatever else one might want to say is being promoted by this presidency. We have a Republican-heavy Senate and Congress. We have an arena by where if this man wants to do certain things, it's going, by golly, by gosh, to happen, because he's going to have the support. He's going to have the support.
But that's a fear, right? That's a fear. And I had that fear. I was in that same place as you're talking about. I had that fear that that was what was going to happen, and I could see the gains that women have made, that African Americans had made, all being erased, right? I could see, and I was just filled with shock and dismay at even the mere thought of that happening. But get this, remember, we're in the last quarter of this Saturn and Jupiter cycle, or this part of this 20-year cycle. And it's a time of breakdown and disintegration, right? So
yes.
That we can formulate and assimilate a new reality. So,
well, this is what I have faith in. I have faith in the fact that we are a collective of, at the end of the day, loving, compassionate, respectful, godlike individuals. And that when this breakdown occurs, Janet, that we will, when this scorpion disintegrates in flames, that the phoenix that rises will be a better one. This is what I pray for now every day. I mean that sincerely.
Yeah.
I know I joke around a lot, but I couldn't be more serious about that, because I'm hoping that this Saturn-Jupiter thing has really made the crucible such that from these burnings, we're going to distill something precious, something better, because we, as you said, can't continue like this.
Right.
And it's not that
so let me give
doing,
everybody
it's
some
not
hope.
That, oh, go ahead. Yes.
Let's go with some hope to end
yes.
this part of our show, because I have one person I know that wants to have a reading, and so we got to do this.
Okay.
But
are we going to go with
the next
who are we going to go with for our reading?
Whoa, wait! I'm not done with what I was going to say yet.
Sorry,
I wanted to leave us with some hope, right? With something to look forward to, and that is this.
Okay.
When we get to the next Jupiter-Saturn conjunction, it occurs at 0 degrees of Aquarius, shifting us out of the earth element of Taurus into the air element, which historically then corresponds with things like social progress, significant intellectual development, new concepts that enter into our human consciousness. So
wonderful. When does that happen?
We have hope here. That begins when we get to December 21st of 2020, which, if we look at it, it's really only 4 years away. And so there's hope here on the horizon. Not only do we get out of this whole idea of money and economy, we open ourselves up to new ways of being, new ways of seeing the world, new consciousness, and new ways of working with social progress or social programs. So I think it's really hopeful. But what has to happen before we get there is some disintegration of old forms and old systems that are no longer suiting us. So
so hold on to your hernia belt.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't go postal on us yet. There is hope on the horizon as we move. And guess what else? At Barack Obama's natal Jupiter sits at 0 degrees of Aquarius. So there's something there about the book that he wrote, The Audacity of Hope, and the idea of the hope that he was able to connect us to in his elections that kind of sets the stage for what may be occurring with that next Saturn-Jupiter conjunction, The Audacity of Hope. So let's hold with that, and let's move ourselves with that energy instead of the dismay that we felt on Tuesday night or Wednesday morning when we woke up and discovered who our president was.
You're just resolute in trying to make me happy. All right, I will suspend my curmudgeon-like attitude. Yes, and I was wondering, since we do only have 5 minutes left, which one of the callers in our queue did you want me to bring in?
Let's bring in Camilla.
All right, wonderful. Hold on just one moment.
Okay.
Hi, Camilla. You're on the line live with Janet. Are you there?
Hi, I'm here. Thanks for taking my call.
Wonderful.
Hi, Camilla.
Hey.
It's funny, I was just going, where did I put his file or the chart? Because I knew I printed it and I couldn't find it for a second. So I actually pulled up the chart for a gentleman in your life. And, you know, can you kind of fill me in maybe what the question is that you might have? You know, what lens should I look at this chart through?
The lens of looking at this man or deciding whether to look at this man as someone that I want to have seriously in my life. And in that, I guess, personality traits,
mm-hmm.
just someone that you can take seriously, essentially, which I know might be hard to judge, but.
Mm-hmm. Yes, particularly because, you know, we're not quite sure if this is the correct birth time or not, but
mm-hmm.
why don't we take a look at Saturn and Jupiter in his chart, and that will give us an idea of what his lessons are and what his growth potential is. How's that?
Perfect.
So, because I know those two aren't going, they may have changed houses a bit, but they're not going to have changed signs or anything like the moon might have, although in this case what we see is Saturn, his lessons, exactly opposite of Jason's. When we were talking about Jason's, Jupiter was in Virgo. This guy's Saturn is in Virgo. So some of the
mm-hmm.
lessons he is going to be learning are conjunct his destiny, which is all about really learning about how to become whole. How to be his authentic self, how to bring all of his parts together, even, you know, because we all get fragmented throughout our lifetimes because
mm-hmm.
we've broken up with people, because of things that have happened, traumas and dramas in our lives. We get fragmented. So his Saturn lessons are about how to bring the fragments together and create a whole. His Jupiter, on the other hand, is in Leo. And so so he's bringing the fragments together and creating
mm-hmm.
a whole through which he is on a world stage. He's on a big stage. He's very much
mm-hmm.
in the spotlight with a message to share because his Jupiter is conjunct Mercury. Now, it's in the 12th house, presumably, I'm guessing, right? If we have a Leo rising, then his Jupiter and Mercury are conjunct in the 12th house, which means
mm-hmm.
there's a hidden master here. And whenever I see Jupiter in that 12th house, I think that there's somebody that's in hiding that hasn't quite got to the point yet where they've connected to their spiritual mastery. And so his life rewards come when he connects with that mastery, when he brings his wholeness together or his fragmented
mm-hmm.
selves together, and he
mm-hmm.
becomes the master that's hidden within. So he has a lot of potential here, and then a lot of potential to speak to that, educate to that, as
mm-hmm.
he moves through his life. So I think
awesome.
He's probably an extraordinary person.
He is.
And I think he would be a good choice. I don't remember. I'm sorry, I don't have your chart in front of me. I don't remember what your sign is.
I'm a Pisces.
And much of your
Pisces sun, Libra moon, or Libra conjunct Pluto moon, and Sag rising.
So maybe in your role in his life is about creating a way for him to have compassion about himself, to have compassion
mm-hmm.
about how the lessons are that he's learning. Because Pisces is very loving, very spiritual, and
mm-hmm.
really resonates to the energy of compassion. And if someone has Virgo lessons, which are about connecting to wholeness, then
mm-hmm.
there may be issues.
I also
with
do
loving
as well.
Himself.
That's why I Saturn Virgo.
So there you go. Both of you are learning together. So I think it's a potential here for a good relationship. There's other indicators we would have to look at for sure, but at this point I think he's a good guy.
Awesome, thank you. And I know he has a Mars in Gemini. Gemini scares me a little bit. I know it's totally judgmental, but do you think he has the potential to be in a monogamous, you know, faithful kind of thing?
Yeah, I would say let's look at his, we'd have to look at his Venus, and his Venus is in the sign of Cancer, and
mm-hmm.
so that means ideally he wants someone in his life that he can relate to as being nurtured and nurturing and being
mm-hmm.
in a much more stable relationship, and that kind of doesn't happen if you give into the Gemini sort of frivolity when it relates to relationships. His Gemini is, his Mars in Gemini is more affecting the career house, which is
okay.
much more about what he does in the world and how he uses his mind in the world. And I'm sorry, we have 7 seconds left, so I want to just say
thank you so much.
Huge thank yous to Jason. You're most welcome. And everybody, thank you so much for joining in today. And I know I didn't get to everybody else to do readings, but there was a lot of good information I had to give out, and I felt like that was more important today. If you have questions that you want me to ask or answer for you, please feel free to email me, Janet, J-A-N-E-T, at living-astrology.com. I'll be happy to answer questions for you. Jason, thank you so much for joining me today and for keeping me on track.
My honor, my pleasure. Of course.
And I'm looking forward to your show next week. And that'll be on Wednesday the 16th at 4 p.m. Pacific time, and followed by Living Astrology on Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific time. So thank you, everybody. Have a stellar week.
Bye, Janet.
Bye, Jason. Thank you for joining me today on Living Astrology. Living Astrology is part of the Empower You Media Network. You can find out more by going to www.living-astrology.com or by going to www.empoweryoumedia.com. If you would like to find out when our shows are airing, you can follow us at Blog Talk Radio under Living Astrology. Please consider liking us on Facebook. Our Facebook page is Living Astrology and also Empower You Media. Thank you so much for joining us. Bye for now. Have a stellar week.